Welcome to today's Association of United States Army Thought Leader Podcast on the Army Futures Command Future Study Program and the Character of Land Power in 2035. This is Colonel Retired Dan Roper, AUSA's Director of National Security Studies. I'll be serving as your host. We are fortunate today to be joined once again by two Army Futures Command leaders who have been spearheading the Team Ignite initiative for the United States Army, Dr. Gene Bettel and Colonel Stephanie Ahern. Dr. Bettel is the inaugural Chief Scientist for the Futures and Concepts Center in a position provided by the Combat Capabilities Development Command, also known as DEVCOM. She's got a doctorate in neuroscience from Brown and holds academic appointments with UC Santa Barbara and the University of Pennsylvania. She's been a civilian neuroscientist for over a decade. Colonel Ahern is the Director of Concepts at the Futures and Concepts Center of the Army Futures Command. A graduate of the United States Military Academy, she's got a Master's of Art in International Relations and a PhD in Political Science from the University of Notre Dame, as well as a Master of Strategic Studies from the United States Army War College. She has served as a Director for Strategic Planning of the National Security Council and Chief of the Secretary of the Army's Initiatives Group. Ladies, welcome back to AUSA's Thought Leaders Podcast.
Thanks so much for having us. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Now, when you joined us for your interesting and informative podcast back in November, you described Team Ignite and its innovative approach to imagining what could be, in doing so by breaking science and technology apart, and then linking science to the Army's concept framework and integrating technology development with the requirements process. Could you describe for us the broader Army Futures Command Future Study Program and how Team Ignite is related to it?
Absolutely, and this is Colonel Stephanie Ahern. Every service has a main war game. And so the Future Study Program we used to call Unified Quest, but it is the Army's main war game for us to be able to evaluate and examine, add with some experimentation, questions that we are most concerned about. And so right now, this is what we're looking at for the 2035 and beyond operational concept. Previously, this was how we developed multi-domain operations over several years. They've done the profession of arms and other topics that the Chief of Staff of the Army has been interested in. But this is a really important tool that the Army has to get after critical questions that we have about our future.
And with the Ignite concept, our goal is really to integrate expertise across diverse communities. And so what's beautiful about the Future Study Program, which is a four-part seminar series, is the way that it progresses across the four seminars really embeds that perspective. So the very first one, which happened last November, was on the character of warfare in 2035. And this event was very broad. It was a seminar-type series of the whole week-long, all virtual platforms. We had academics come in. We had some thought leaders, some novelists, government researchers, industry collaborators all came together, and we debated what the future operating environment would be like in 2035, what sort of unique challenges it was going to bring to bear for our nation. Once we have some of the level set operational challenge on 2035, the next event, which is the focus of today's conversation, the character of land power, was what's the Army's role within that future operating environment? And that's what we just did here back in February. And we're gearing up for the next one, which will be more focused on what are some of the emerging technologies that will allow us to overcome some of the operational challenges the Army will face for its component to the joint force with allies and partners for the 2035 operating environment. So it's a beautiful progression across the series. Colonel Ahern and I like to talk about like who's in the hot seat, you know? So like in the last event, the operational folks were in the hot seat with the technical SMEs like myself in support, you know? So they would say, oh, I think we're going to have this massive problem in the future. Could we possibly get camouflage for our systems where we can move where no one could see us, both digitally and physically in the real world? And so the technical SMEs would just do like, oh, that's possible. No, can't do that. That's still science fiction. And then in contrast, the one coming up, which we're currently doing our planning for, will switch that. And now the technical SMEs will say, like, oh, we think we could integrate these technologies in order to achieve this operational. Would you ever fight that way? And the operational side can say, like, yeah, that makes sense, sir. We would never do that. Please don't do that. You know, that's not the right solution. So it's really this great development under Colonel Ahern's leadership in particular of how the Future Study Program is really getting reshaped this year to address Army future challenges.
Having participated in some of the Unified Quest exercise series a number of years ago, it sounds like you've really carried it to the next level, and you really think in creative and imaginative ways, because just simple solutions to yesterday's problems are probably not achievable. This seems like a very high-powered group and approach to getting after that. Could you describe some of the results of the character warfare seminar that might be surprising to our listeners? And then we'll talk a little bit more about the seminar you just completed on land power, a little bit more specificity.
Again, with the character of warfare, trying not to focus on land per se, but of course that's a critical role with warfare. Maybe the first is that, so as we're looking to 2035, and we had some key think tank futurist folks that came in and talked to us, and one of the arguments that one of the gentlemen made that resonated very strongly was, we could plan for many different challenges in the future, but if there's a large-scale conflict, the Army and the Joint Force has to be prepared for that. We can't take risk there. And that's really been General McKean and General Murray's guidance to us, is that we have to prepare for that peer threat in the future. But one of the lessons that the Directorate of Intelligence and Security, or RG2, their document that they put out, is that when we look forward, we could be in a bipolar world, so there could be two main countries and their allies and partners. It could be multipolar, so there could be many different large powers with the ability to impact others. But either way, especially if we're in a bipolar world, kind of like we were during the Cold War, we have to be prepared for that large-scale conflict, but it's actually less likely that you'll have that. And again, that would kind of make sense because it would be catastrophic then if you did. And so as we're looking through being prepared for that large-scale conflict, knowing that we have to be prepared for that, we also have to make sure that we're thinking through the new operational concept that we're developing of how could it apply to smaller wars, whether it's from proxies, whether it's from countries that are trying to test their new technologies, they're trying to test new approaches, they're trying to take advantage of their neighbors, countries that are trying to take advantage of opportunities. So a whole host of reasons of why conflict could still happen. And so just trying to think through how do we prepare for the large scale while then also looking at where it would be more likely that we might be used.
The AFC publication on the future operating environment from 2035 to 2050 talks about the power competition, bipolar, multipolar. But then the second axis of relevance for thinking about the future operating environment is about the rate of technological proliferation. And one of the most interesting insights that we had during the first seminar on the character of warfare in 2035 back in November was how our S&T policy was largely determined after World War II. This S&T policy where we intentionally made basic research open source, which means we were intentionally building collaborations and partnerships across the globe, allowing the benefits of science and the advancement of knowledge to improve the human condition. The U.S. decided that that was going to be an international advantage, which is great for improving the human condition, but it makes it a particular challenge because if you read the White House guidance on the reason for S&T investment, even just a couple of years ago, S&T investments were to give us technological superiority, not technological advantage, technological superiority. And that concept of technological superiority for the U.S. is sort of moot based on the policy decision that was made, what, half a century or more ago, to make sure that the S&T advancements were actually global. So now most things like hot in the press talk about advancements in synthetic biology or advancements in quantum or hypersonics or directed energy. These are a lot of the things that news outlets will talk about as some of the core places for new technological achievements. Most of those things, including nuclear power, for goodness sakes, are international partnerships. So it is projected that any advancement that occurs will basically have worldwide access almost as soon as it happens. So that really puts the focus, and this is actually what's embedded in the Ignite strategy documents that are in development, is that competitive advantage is projected for the country that can more rapidly convert a new technological advancement into an operational capability and train their forces to employ it. And so that's part of what it is that we're doing in the way in which future study program is being developed and executed is really to get all of the expertise that's relevant for that rapid adaptation to a dynamic threat, well, part of our modernization enterprise.
And maybe two more quick points just from an Ignite perspective. So we obviously had the concept community, S&T community. The threat community was deeply embedded with the Future Study Program 1 and 2 and 3, and it will be in 4. One of their big insights is, again, if we're facing a peer adversary, is that where we aren't, that's where our adversaries are likely to go. And that could be a physical location. It could also be in different domains or different dimensions. And so, again, remembering that there will be only windows of superiority or windows of opportunity that we have, how do we make sure we identify those? But realizing that we simply can't be everywhere and we have a thinking adversary. And then the last one was that I think people that are in the Army, we feel this deeply, but it came out so clearly that even though that technology is changing, the nature of warfare is not. And that if countries are willing to go to war for existential threats, they will commit treasure, but they will also commit blood. And so we're not going to have a Terminator versus Terminator war. There will be machines and machines, but at the end of the day, technology does not make warfare simpler, easier, or better. It's simply just a bigger hell.
That's a very interesting thinking going on there. It just strikes me looking at the problem statement that was developed, and I think it was developed in your first seminar on the character of warfare, about the problem confronting the Army in 2035. Just my reading of it makes it look like it's more focused on conflict than competition. And I'll read it just so our listeners can get some context here. And this may have evolved in the most recent seminar, and I'd be interested to hear it. But the initial working statement is, how does the Army, as part of a globally postured joint and combined force, employ decisive land power in support of combatant commanders during armed conflict against a peer adversary in a denied environment characterized by contested domains, rapid machine-enabled decision-making, and man-machine teaming? So my question is, did we talk about competition as well, or was it more focused on the worst case scenario, which is open conflict between peer competitors?
So I would say yes and. So I think coming from the comments from General McConville this morning, great power competition does not mean great power conflict. In fact, we need to make sure that it doesn't happen. What we, as we're starting to pull apart the question of with conflict, we are looking at what the Army can and could be doing in the future based off of new technologies, based off of a new concept in competition and crisis, because there are things that we, at the end of the day, we're going to be continuing in competition. Crisis will happen. How can we de-escalate whenever possible? But then also, what are some of those things that we need to be able to do during crisis so that if there is a decision to go to war or if the adversary decides to launch an attack, that we are best prepared? Part of the way that we have deterrence is to have the credible force to be able to respond immediately to whatever challenges we have. But within our efforts, we are also explicitly looking at efforts in the offense and the defense. And so that's the armed conflict, realizing that a whole lot of effort, especially within the Army G357, have been the champions and are putting out an Army strategy on competition that should be coming out very soon. And we are very nested within that. But the 2035, we have to look at that competition and crisis, but we're not stopping there to make sure that we are prepared if warfare becomes inevitable.
Although you were focused on the 2035 timeframe as sort of the horizon upon which this seminar is focusing, did anything pop up as being something that ought to be dragged to the left that maybe becomes part of multi-domain operations or joint all-domain operations, you know, prior to that timeframe? Potentially even as early as the next national defense strategy that will probably be coming out in about a year? Or did it more or less have the implications that you were really focused on staying at the 2035 and not trying to bring it into the present?
Very good question. A concept is a concept because it's aspirational. It's aspirational because either we don't have the technology, we haven't come up with a creative enough way to use technology, or both. What we're trying to do is to look at the threat that exists in 2035, and some of that threat exists today. We're looking at the technology that could exist in 2035, and some of that we're already seeing today. And so what we're trying to do is look to the future, but then once we work through it with the technology and the threat, how could we operate differently? How could we be equipped differently? How could we organize differently? Then there is absolutely the implications for sooner if it works better. The one thing that I would want to emphasize very clearly, though, is that all of our work are reinforcing why the multi-domain operations from the concept and that we are shifting to doctrine by next summer absolutely makes sense. So that calibrated force posture to be in better position and to have the excess presence and the relationships, the influence across the world absolutely matters. The ability to have formations that can not only have land to land, but are able to integrate with the air and the sea, the space and the cyber, and then the convergence, the ability to link any sensor with the best shooter and the right command and control node in near real time. Those foundations will absolutely be needed in 2035 and beyond. We do want to make sure that before we make changes into the .mil PFP, that we've experimented to actually know that they work, but we aren't just going to wait 14 years because that's what our stopwatch says.
And sort of related to that too, the Future Study Program is one of a number of AFC initiatives to plan for modernization across timescales. And so to your point, when the conversation at the Future Study Program may identify a disruptive approach for warfare that might get rolled into a cross-functional team that AFC has, or another event where we're thinking about doing some implementation strategies for technical areas, we can take those ideas and seed them as input for another event that can pull that in closer, and or see how they're related to questions that are being asked in the Project Convergence, which is an integration experimentation event that AFC is using as a signature place to experiment for disruptive approaches to warfare across timeframes.
Sounds like this initiative is, in artillery speak, it's servicing a lot of different targets. And that's pretty impressive when you're able to get all those people that are really looking deep and then walking some of it back into some doctrine that'll be coming out next year that'll start to show the contours of what MDO is looking like in action. You know, portions of it, like you said, calibrated force posture and so forth.
And I think the reason is this is really an Army effort. And so really the spearhead for transitioning the multi-domain operations into the doctrine and looking across the .mil-PFP, that's General Rainey and CAC. When we were developing for the Future Study Program, Army Materiel Command, West Point, the Army War College, the SAMS, we were trying to reach across all of the centers of excellence from the warfighting functions. This is really the big tent approach, because this is an Army-wide challenge. And so working across the different parts of Army Futures Command, which is really such a benefit because the key parts of the S&T, the threat, the concepts, we all report to General Murray. And so kind of reinforcing the wisdom of the structure that we have, but then also trying to get as many people as possible into this discussion, because there are no shortages of needing to have those intellectual guns in the fight.
I heard General Murray talk about this fairly recently, and it sounds like the full court press on getting all the intellectual guns into the fight. And it's a very inclusive approach. It really seems to be yielding some good food for thought for how to prepare the force to get to that. As you look at the Futures Command, Future Study Program, what does success look like for that looking downstream?
So the Future Study Program 4 is to test out the core framework for the next operational concept. These take years. We don't have years to just wait and think. And so at the Future Study Program 4, that should be in August, we're committed to give the outbrief to General McConville. General Murray wants to have this to help the Army focus on what are the capabilities that we could be providing to combatant commanders. And so we're working right now to finish the core of that framework, a narrative about how we could fight. But really then it's how is this feeding into the experimentations that General McKean is leading on behalf of General Murray, looking across the Army of how we're able to learn lessons and then incorporate different approaches much more quickly than we had before.
It also feeds as the bidirectional collaboration with the S&T community, with the research community, so that another key outcome for the Future Study Program are essentially documents or research program ideas where we are targeting and vectoring research to better refine what we actually could realize by 2035, 2040, 2050. So we're always vectoring the approach that we're taking to keep that refinement. So even when Colonel Ahern's talking about experimentation from sort of large-scale Army, you know, within the research community, we do hundreds of experiments a week, right, on particular technology design or science to understand whether we can get this measurement from either people or from the world and how we can then analyze and pull out signal from a very noisy measurement. So all of those things, right, the more we have that be within Army investments, really targeted to the Army problems, but still in collaboration with folks who are kind of doing more free exploration, that really helps refine how the outcomes and the vision that we have, this collective vision that we can develop with Future Study Program and other AFC efforts, but what the future could be, that we're literally getting all of these communities then taking whatever their core execution is, right, in the case of S&T, like our research, the ideas that we're advancing, the technology that we're developing, we're making sure that those are aligned to a common vision and then getting feedback, but then also giving feedback, right? Like we had that great idea 2 years ago at FSP. Well, turns out that we just can't get the math to work out that way. So we're going to try to shift their vector this way. Or, wow, we had this advancement kind of to your question earlier, Dan. We can say, we actually think that we can accelerate the delivery of that. Let's try to put that more near term. And if we have this constant dialect between the organizations or among the communities,
that's essentially where we can really drive this modernization enterprise to be a thinking enterprise in and of itself, to sort of stay ahead of a thinking adversary. That's a great point. It
really is. I'd like to ask you concluding thoughts. Specifically, what else would you like our listeners to know about the Future Study Program and how they can be involved and what they should look for as you continue to progress down the road here?
I think that if people are within the U.S. government, a lot of the efforts that we are doing in the rest of this fiscal year are really looking at the problem, scrutinizing it from the controlled unclassified information and the classified. So if there are people that are within the U.S. government that are looking at the operational problem, we are very interested in having those discussions. I would say, in addition, we are also working the more unclassified separate, because this isn't something that is only within the military channels. This is not just within the U.S. government channels. This is to be on the better footing for the challenges that we have ahead. And so I think part of it is that we are looking for new approaches, new ideas, but also new partners within this. And so there's many different avenues to get involved, from especially those that are within the Army that are looking at these land power problems. This is our challenge. And so it's not just a couple of us that are at Austin and a couple of us that are at Eustis and a couple of us that are Aberdeen that are trying to solve this. This is really something to make sure that our sons and daughters and grandkids are able to really have the same benefits that we do in this free and open society. So we appreciate the ability to talk, but this is very important, and we appreciate the partnership with others.
I think I would just refine that Future Study Program is one example of what we need to accelerate and proliferate across our nation, really, across communities, whether it's industry, government, academic partners. What is it that we as a nation want to do to preserve our commitment to improving the human condition and sharing, but then also making sure that we can preserve our way of life? I mean, this Knight philosophy is, whatever you happen to do on your daily to-do list, how is it that you can integrate expertise to more rapidly converge insights about what could be in the future to really ensure that we have a competitive advantage? And just remembering that your output, if it's equally available to both adversaries and your own peers, like, how is it that you can balance that? And I just think there's no right answer. And I think having more people think about that gray space is a very good thing.
Two very strong comments to close out with. And actually synthesizing what you both just said, it sort of reinforces what the DEVCOM commander said a number of months ago about building a culture of connection between soldiers, scientists, and technology experts. And then you just expanded that circle to society writ large. And that's a pretty tall order. This is definitely something that's going to get us moving in that direction. I'd like to thank Dr. Gene Vettel and Colonel Stephanie Ahern for being with us today and sharing their insights on something so important to Army modernization, and as we just heard, to the United States and its friends and allies and partners as well. We look forward to hearing more about your continued efforts in building an Army that will deliver Aimpoint 2035 MBO capabilities and delivering them to the Joint Force.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.